All right, this is Gary Parrish again. This is the Eye on College Basketball podcast again. I'm talking to you now on the morning of January 27th, otherwise known as the morning after the Grammys and the morning after Arizona got pushed at home by Utah. If ever there were a night for Arizona to struggle on national television, it was probably last night, because I think most of America, even college basketball writers, were preoccupied with the Grammys, which, of course, were broadcast live on CBS, which, of course, is America's most watched network. It is the network of stars. Anyway, Jeff Borzello and Matt Norlander are here with me because it's Monday. Good morning, fellas. How are you?
I'm great. Happy to be back. I heard the podcast was terrible last week without me, so it's fine.
You know what? I don't know if it was terrible because you were absent, but I do think it was. I felt rushed all the whole time and slightly distracted because I had a whole bunch of stuff going on. I was in Wichita, Kansas, and I knew I had to get to a practice and had to sit downs with Fred VanVleet and Ron Baker, and then I was going to a film session with them and then going to practice with them, and I just felt I felt distracted the entire time. So I don't know if it was subpar because of your absence, but I don't mind saying
it. I think it attributed to it.
I think it might have contributed to it. Yeah. I do believe it was subpar, but not because of Matt Norlander. He was sharp as ever. Hey, Matt Norlander.
Hey, it's all good, man. No, it was a little different, but I don't mind going a little one-on-one with GP. And we're gonna give you plenty of space to talk here, Borzello. So I'm gonna see to you.
The thing is, I didn't watch the Grammys.
So well, I know. We'll save that to the end. We'll put that to the end, and we can get you
in. I'll chime in on Kendrick Lamar. That's about it.
So okay, let's all fess up. How many out of the three of us, who actually watched Arizona? Who actually watched the Grammys?
I watched UCLA Cal. I didn't watch either Arizona or the Grammys.
I watched both. I just had Arizona on a second screen with no sound. So my attention was primarily dedicated to the Grammys until it got to like 5 minutes, and then I actually went sound on Arizona, and thankfully I was rooting for Arizona because I really didn't want them to lose.
I was award shows personally. I find them boring.
I think they're terrific. I love all award shows, because particularly with Twitter, because you feel like you're watching with a lot of people, and then folks are making jokes and tweeting pictures. I don't know that there's anything more fun. I mean, there's some things more fun, right? But I don't know that there's anything more entertaining in terms of sitting at home with Twitter than watching big time award shows that other people are watching. Grammys, Oscars, VMAs. I actually think it's like that's about as fun of 3 hours you can spend in front of a computer.
I will say that I did like when I was seeing everyone tweeting about it, I felt a little bit left out because I wasn't watching.
Well, and it's not like the Grammys, honestly, like they haven't been a true reflection, I think, of what is great overall consistently in the music business for like 25 years, but that's really irrelevant to the proceedings. Like,
right. It's just a show, you know, a show, and they're putting people on stage, and you've got A-list entertainers there, and then they're on stage, and oftentimes they're on stage in situations that they'll never be in again. And I think the whole thing's like, I think it's a fun way to spend a Sunday night. Now, maybe that's because I'm old and I need to, and if I were in my early 20s and single, I would have more entertaining ways to spend Sunday nights, but it's sitting here as a father of two, watching the Grammys with Twitter.
That's as good as it gets.
That's about as good as it gets. And you know, no, actually, like my son is now, my older son is of the age where he's actually into this stuff, right? Like he's familiar with the artist, and there's people he wants to see. Like he's interested to see Daft Punk and whatever. And so that makes it more fun as well, because you feel like you're. Yeah, I don't want to say bonding over it, but he's at least intrigued by it. Certainly more so than he would be a college basketball game.
So the Grammys brought a father-son moment?
Yeah, the Grammys created a father-son moment. When he asked me, Dad, why is Madonna marrying a bunch of people in front of Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard? I didn't really have my explanation for him. I didn't know how to answer that.
Yeah, that part was that was just weird.
It was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then I couldn't help but notice that Madonna, and I tweeted this out, she looked like she was dressed like Joey from that episode of Friends where he's selling the cologne, and then someone actually tweeted back at me like a side-by-side photo, and it was pretty scary how close that was.
She was up there dressed like Colonel Sanders.
it was a night where everyone could poke fun at Taylor Swift again, and so I guess that makes it a success.
That's the one thing I did see. I think everyone saw it.
Did you see the pump fake where
she got faked out of her dress there, man. That was genuine shock from Taylor Swift. She always gets railed for being fake surprised. Now we've seen what it's like when she's actually surprised.
I like Taylor Swift. I know she's an easy target, and like the clip of her. First off, I think she's like a talented young woman. Like I think she, you know, I don't own her albums, but I know her songs for the same reason, or know her hits for the same reason anybody would know her hits, because they're unavoidable. I mean, you're going to hear them somewhere. I think she's super talented, and you know, like she's not out running around like, you know, drinking and driving and drug problem and getting arrested like Justin Bieber. Like, to the extent that she has issues, they're like boy issues, which is, you know, practically every girl her age has. And so the clip of her last night when she thought she won because she heard the R sound, that was hilarious. But the idea people are making fun of her because she's like dancing when Kendrick Lamar's on stage or whatever, like she's having a blast. Like, I don't mind that at all. She seems like somebody who's genuinely having a good time, which is what you ought to be doing in that, you know, if you're having the type of life that she's having, right? I mean, she seems to be enjoying herself. I don't mind Taylor Swift nearly as much as most people do.
I think the problem is...
I have no problem with her, personally.
Well, I think the reason why people have an issue with her is actually because they'd feel like a lot of what she does is not genuine, and she kind of always tends to lay it on thick, and it's always, oh my gosh, I did not even believe this might be possible.
Well, that is hilarious. Like, she is now...
Norlander, do that one more time.
She's now...
That was a one-time thing, I'm afraid.
She's now perfected the whole, like, oh my God, I can't believe this. Like, it would be one thing, like, if I were at the Grammys and they gave me an award, and I would walk on stage and be genuinely surprised. I'd be like, wow, I can't believe this. Like, but at this point, once you've won every award there is to win, like, 10 times, you can't be surprised anymore. Like, I would actually enjoy her more if she walked on stage and be like, yo, I got another one. Big shock, huh? You know, like, but so I get why that might rub people the wrong way, but listen, she seems like a sweet enough girl who writes good songs for the type of songs she's trying to write. And if she has boy problems every once in a while, I don't mind it. It probably makes her better at her craft. So I'm on team Taylor Swift. Is there such a thing?
There is.
Okay,
sure.
Cool. Well, I'm
sure
on that.
I'm sure there's a massive army, and I have a buddy who is a total like beer hipster connoisseur, and he unironically loves Taylor Swift. I think that's kind of a subset of the culture.
I like some of her music, unironically.
By the way, I need to give our colleague Dennis Dodd a shout out. Every year at the Grammys, you know, a couple years ago it was Who is Arcade Fire when they won for best record, okay? And obviously this year Daft Punk, I think, kind of ran away with the show in terms of most awards won. And so Dodd gets on Twitter and he's like, does Daft Punk pay taxes? I want to see their IDs. These guys have been around 20 years. What's the point with the look? For all we know, Daft Punk is John Beliveau and Scooby-Doo. At least we, and then like, he doesn't respond to people like publicly, so people are obviously tweeting at him, but then he goes, at least we know who Kiss is. Capital letters. Hardly a comparison to Daft Punk. So I know Dennis is a big Steely Dan fan, so I hope he spends some of the Dan and embraces himself to Daft Punk, because that record was truly awesome. And, you know, as I said, like in the modern time, like I guess what? Ocean's record was good last year, Daft Punk, but we don't get a lot of records that are kind of critically acclaimed and ridiculously popular, like just beloved by everyone. And I think that Daft Punk record seriously qualified.
The generational thing when watching the Grammys is always funny to me, or any award show, because you get this where young people, and I think I'm sort of caught in the middle. Like I joked earlier that I'm old, and I am old. I feel old. But I'm sort of caught in the middle of like, at least the people I follow on Twitter, and so the people younger than I, they constantly trying to tell you how something is awesome and the best ever, and then the older people are constantly trying to tell you that, you know, this doesn't compare to where music was 20 years ago. And I always find that, like, I don't know, like the truth, this is what I believe to be true. Whenever music is made, if it's the 60s, 70s, 80s, for the most part, you like whatever type of music is produced when you're between the ages of like 15 and 25. And that's the type of like, so for me, you know, you go back to that was like Guns N' Roses and then Pearl Jam and then Nirvana and Soundgarden and Alice in Chains. So, like, if you throw on an Alice in Chains album, I'll be like, yeah, I love this album. But if Alice in Chains came out tomorrow, I would never even hear them. Like, I wouldn't even know that they existed. And so the truth is, I don't think, like, you get people older than I am talking about how, oh, music today doesn't compare. And music today perfectly compares. Like, there's people doing really great stuff, and there's people doing shitty stuff, and that's the way it's always been, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, totally. It's why, like, I know the Gin Blossoms aren't an all-time great band, but I can't help but love the Gin Blossoms,
because
I happened to be 16 years old when
they were
popular on the radio. So, yeah, there's certainly a nostalgia factor to that. The key is to, as you get older, do your best to embrace whatever stuff. And there is, like, obviously, like, I mean, we had Willie Nelson, Stevie Wonder, Paul McCartney, Ringo Starr playing music last night on TV. And I think that is awesome that we still have.
Are you saying Kesha and Katy Perry will be timeless for me?
I don't know. By the way, I'll say, like, I have never gotten the Katy Perry thing.
What?
Like,
what do you mean you had never gotten it?
I've just never gotten
it, man.
She
puts out smash after smash.
Yeah,
no,
I know.
She's a superstar, but I'm actually with Norlander on this.
Really?
Like,
you don't like your music?
No, I get why
I think
she's...
it's catchy. I think it's the greatest stuff ever made.
I think some of it's catchy. Like, the whole Eye of the Tiger song, like, I don't think that's
catchy.
Oh,
that song's terrible.
Song is terrible, right? She has some catchy... Like, I actually think, like, Taylor Swift is talented to some degree. I don't know that Katy Perry is talented other than being... Like, she seems to have a spunky personality, and she's... You know, she looks a certain way, and so here she
is. A certain way, that's for sure.
Yeah, right. So let's go ahead and get into this then. Kendrick Lamar, best performance of the night. I thought it was clear cut.
Oh, man.
That's the only one I saw. I saw a video of it. That's the only one I saw, but it was fantastic from what I saw.
Yeah,
I don't
okay,
know.
So...
I don't know what else. I don't know who, you know, any other performances, but I'm going to throw in that.
Well, like, I Imagine Dragons isn't quite my style.
Me neither. When I heard Kendrick was playing with those guys, I was like, ugh. You know, I'd rather just see Kendrick do his own thing. I thought it worked. Listen, I don't know that I'd buy the album if Kendrick Lamar, you know, with Imagine Dragons. Like, I don't. But for those 6 minutes, I thought it was a great 6 minutes of award show performance. You know, period.
I thought it was pretty good. I did like Daft Punk, Stevie, Pharrell, who changed the hat game forever, by the way. I probably like that best. And then just because I love Queens of the Stone Age, their performance at the end, I'd probably put that second. And then Kendrick Lamar, who, by the way, yeah, that guy's the real deal. Like, I'm not nearly into hip hop as much as Borzello, but I do enjoy it. And Good Kid, Mad City. I don't own the record, but a couple of my friends do, and that's legitimate. Which, by the way, it came out. Here's a weird thing with the Grammys: like, that was up for the Record of the Year or whatever, I guess. And but it came out in October of 2012.
I know.
So it's always a little delay. Like, Taylor Swift's record came out in 2012, so it's always got the Grammys have this weird. I don't know what the timeline is. I don't know if it what you have to do in terms of qualifying and when you have to release your record. But you've got like Kendrick Lamar. If you watched last night, you might have thought he's kind of new to the scene, and he really isn't.
No,
like, I didn't even know when I saw everyone tweet that he got robbed by Macklemore for Best New Artist. I didn't even know he was up for, because he's been around for, like, you know, a few years now. I didn't know he was still considered, like, a new artist.
And for, like, Best Rap Album. Did you see this morning? Like, Macklemore actually apologized.
He also went on Hot 97, the radio station here in New York, and he said that he feels that K-Dot got robbed, quote-unquote.
Well, he did. I mean, I guess.
No question.
Right. The idea that Macklemore could beat Kendrick Lamar for any award is a little silly. But whatever. I don't care about that. But, no, Kendrick is – I actually saw him – a few months ago, like night before Thanksgiving, he opened for Kanye West on the Yeezus tour that I went to, and he's terrific. Like, he's super talented, and it's funny. Like, so you get this performance last night where I guess for a lot of mainstream America, it was the first time they'd ever laid their eyes on Kendrick Lamar, and I thought he like killed it, the performance.
Yeah.
I thought it was terrific, right? And then there's still like these people. They're just like, Kendrick Lamar is overrated. It's a little bit like, it reminds me of college basketball rankings. Like, as good as Arizona's been all year long, really. There's somebody out there still ready to tell you how Arizona is overrated. It's like, man, can you just sit back and enjoy this? Like, who? Like, listen, nobody's saying Kendrick Lamar's the Beatles, I don't guess. But, Mike, like, that was a good performance, and he's a talented young guy. Like, why? This people's anxiousness to crap on something all the time, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's always going to be the case. And people get oddly possessive and protective of their music taste, which I'm always for. Hey, man, like what you like, and there's tons out there for everyone. So you
but
know,
my tastes are all over the place. Like I am just as likely to drive somewhere listening to Kendrick Lamar album as I am a Willie Nelson album. You know, so like I can enjoy all that. I did. I'll tell you who I felt sorry for last night is the poor girl who had to follow Kendrick Lamar. Dude, why did somebody, like they're smart people, you know, running this thing. I'm sure of it, right? Why did somebody not think, okay, after that performance, we need to take a break, come back from commercial, and then let, what's her name, Kacey Musgrove? Is that her name?
I
didn't know her at all, right? She seemed like a sweet girl. She's a pretty little girl, but she didn't need to be trying to follow that performance. Yeah. It was so awkward. It was just jarring. Like they could go from that to her and her little acoustic guitar. The whole thing was like really, really, that part of it was not planned too well.
Yeah, but overall, hey, it was a fun night to just kind of watch and check in on the state of the music business, I guess, overall, you know?
All right, well, let's talk basketball because I'm sure.
Yeah, let's talk hoops.
We got to be. Hey, if we haven't lost people by now, bless your heart. Arizona, by the way, did stay undefeated last night with that win over you. And listen, they weren't brilliant in that game. It was not their best performance of the year, but the idea that they're sitting here, you know, undefeated on January 27th with a road win at San Diego State, which is obviously, you know, if we didn't recognize how good that was at the time, we do now. A road win at Michigan, which if we didn't recognize how good that was at the time, we do now. And again, I don't know that they're going to win a national championship, but in terms of scheduling aggressively and then performing against that schedule, I don't think you could do better than what Sean Miller's done this year. What do you make of the Wildcats, Borzella?
I mean, if I had to pick a champion right now, it would probably be them, just because of, you know, to me, they just have so many ways they could beat teams. If you take away one thing, they can do something else. If you make them, you know, if you zone them, make them shoot threes, they have 3 6-9 guys, 6-9 and above guys in the front court to get offensive rebounds. And, you know, they defend terrifically. And those three wins that you mentioned are looking better than they did at the time in San Diego State, Michigan, Duke. It's going to be tough to me for a team to have three better wins than that. I do think Arizona's going to end up losing this week. They go on the road to Stanford and Cal. I think they're going to fall at Cal during the weekend.
Predicting an upset. Yep. Norlander, you on board with that?
I think I am on board with that. Overall, team is awesome. If I would take a healthy, and I stress healthy, Michigan State in a tournament format over Arizona, but it would be so close. It's really good to see Nick Johnson finally, who he was pretty awesome last night, kind of really starting to get his due. I mean, we've given him love on the site, and in terms of player of the year, we've been there the longest, just in terms of saying, hey, you know, a couple months back, Arizona's really good. We really need to represent this team with someone that's worthy, because they have a very well-balanced offense, and that's part of why they are what they are. I mean, they really have reliability at every single position. Plus, you know, Rondé Hollis-Jefferson and Gabe York are really solid guys off the bench. But I just don't think they're going to get out of this road trip upcoming with two wins at Stanford. Yeah, they should win that. And then the game at Cal on Saturday. If they win those, they're going to lose at some point. By the way, Ken Pom tweeted last night that he thinks, and I disagree with him, he thinks we've kind of crossed the threshold here where, you know, even though his stats say there's still a 48% chance that we're going to have an undefeated team, he thinks at this point, given the schedules ahead, that it's almost an inevitability. I still think we're going to have all these teams lose.
Me too.
I would love to see one not lose, because I root for this every year. Like, I want to see a team get to the tournament without a loss. I think it's always an amazing story to see, but I just don't think it's going to happen.
Well, with Arizona, like once you can win at Michigan and win at San Diego State, like winning at Cal isn't some big hurdle. Like they'll be a 5, 6, 7 point favorite in that game. They might lose because teams that are 5, 6, 7 point favorites lose every single weekend. You know, there wouldn't be anything unique or rare about it, but but if they get past this little stretch right here, I think they've got I guess it's never a good chance. Like it's until you get to almost like mid February probably, but it seems more realistic. And I guess this is just by definition than it's ever seen before. And I could actually buy it now. I'm typically a guy who will dismiss it just by saying, listen, teams lose. they'll lose. I could buy it now. If you suggest Arizona is going to enter Selection Sunday undefeated, I could certainly envision it. With Wichita State, they've got a little stretch after this week, I think. Well, right now they got home games against Loyola Chicago and Evansville coming up. Both those teams are outside the top 200 at KenPom. So they'll knock those out. They'll be 23-0 going to Indiana State, and then they've got Northern Iowa following that. If they get through, and I don't know if they'll get through those, right? They'll be single-digit favorites in both of those games, but not significant favorites in either of those games. But I'll say this. If Wichita State gets to 25-0, which would mean wins over Loyola Chicago, Evansville, Indiana State, and then Northern Iowa, I think then they're going to go to Selection Sunday undefeated. I think
if you had to pick one of the three unbeatens to last the longest, who would it be?
Still Wichita State. I mean, it's not strictly because I think they're better than the other two. It's some of it's schedule related, no question.
So you think they get through that two road game stretch?
I think they will. You know, I think the Missouri State game, and actually, like Fred VanVleet and Ron Baker, I sat down with them last Monday, and they both, without me bringing it up, they brought it up as like, you know, we didn't realize, you know, you get into this habit of winning and you just think, listen, we're better than the other team. We'll show up. We'll win. We didn't realize, like, everywhere we go now, it is a big deal. And they both said, listen, it's way different than last year. Like, we were pretty good last year, but it wasn't a big deal every time we went on the road. Now, every time we walk in, it is a huge deal. And we weren't ready for it at Missouri State, and we almost got caught. But I think that, because they said, it opened their eyes a little bit. And that's a pretty mature group of guys. And I just think they're going to be very aware of what they're up against. And they might lose just because, you know, you can lose. But I don't think they'll go into a game and not perform or not be ready. I don't think if they lose at Indiana State or Northern Iowa, you won't see a press conference from Greg Marshall or Ron Baker or Clea Anthony Early where they say, hey, we just weren't ready tonight. I think they'll be ready. And I think I actually would predict them at this point to be Selection Sunday undefeated.
I'm going to say no for two reasons. One, I mean, Indiana State is the toughest matchup for them left. Now, here's the deal. Like, they paced Indiana State when they played on Wichita's floor, but ISU was 16-4, 7-1 in the league. Pretty good.
Jake Odom also had, like, a concussion or something like that right before that.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. I had forgotten about that, Borzella. So I'd say that. And then also, someone tweeted at this me over the weekend. I didn't realize. So Wichita State has never won the Valley Tournament in the at Arch Madness in the arena that they play it at. I didn't realize that. Not that they can't win it, but historically, that's if they're going to do it, I guess this would be this year of all years. But I'm still going to lean that they will that they'll drop a game. But again, I'd love to see that not be the case.
I'm still going with Syracuse as going the longest. Because
that weight game is tricky, by the way.
Yeah, but if they get past that weight game, they have three straight home games, Duke, Notre Dame, Clemson, then they go at Pittsburgh. I think they're going to lose to Pittsburgh, but I think by then both Arizona and Wichita State will have lost.
The other big story of the weekend was, I think, probably Michigan going to Michigan State and winning. I know Adrian Payne was out. I know Brandon Dawson, obviously, out. So Michigan State down two starters. But still, at tip-off, Michigan State was a five-point favorite over Michigan. So this was an upset. And just the idea that, you know, you could lose Trey Burke, Tim Hardaway, then go into the season, lose your preseason All-American and Mitch McGarry, and still be sitting here undefeated in the Big Ten, ranked at least in the top 10 of the top 25 and one. I don't know where they're going to be in the AP and coaches poll. But and listen, we're not telling secrets here or you know, sharing information that other people don't realize. But the idea that the job that John Beilein's doing is just off the charts right now.
Yeah, and I think that going forward, the key is going to be Derek Walton. And we saw him on Saturday. He pretty much held his own, maybe even outplayed Keith Appling in 19 points, and he only had one turnover. I think that's kind of been the key for them all year, is still finding someone that could run the team and get Nick Stauskas and Glenn Robinson shots. And he's been kind of inconsistent all year. Spike Albrecht has had to run the point a lot, but if he can continue to play well, hit free throws late, and take care of the ball, you know, they have a guy like Stauskas who can carry them the rest of the way.
How about this? Right now, Michigan is a better team on offense overall than they were last year, points per 100 possessions, and they were number one in the country last year. Now, because Creighton's amazing this year, Michigan's not at the top of the nation in that regard, but that's simply amazing to me. When you don't have Burke and Hardaway, and McGarry's out basically for the year. And statistically, against a good schedule, your offense has improved. I was so wrong on Michigan. I really thought that they were going to be on pace for like a 7 or 8 seed at the start of the year. And then when they struggled and they fell to Charlotte, and then they didn't look good against Duke, and they lost one, a close one at home to Arizona. At that point, they were 6-4. I really thought they were going to even struggle to make it to the first four. But I was way off. I mean, Stauskas obviously is the known commodity, and he is the MVP of the team, but Borzello nailed it in what Walton can do and how well he played. I mean, he looks so good. LeVert, I think, is an underrated Big Ten player, and I think Glenn Robinson probably needs to maybe step up a little more going forward. Because yeah. I'm expecting a come down for Michigan. I think that they're just going to, like, they've got a back to back against Iowa and Ohio State in February. I think they're going to lose both of those games. So they're going to get a nice seed. But a part of me still just, it feels like this team's defense is going to be a liability. And while they're 7-0 and atop the Big Ten right now, I just can't shake the feeling that I don't totally trust them. So they're definitely better than I thought they'd be, would be. And I was way wrong on that, but I still think they're going to lose at least 3 more games at least until we get to Selection Sunday.
Well, you know what? That's probably a conference championship if you only lose 3 more.
Great point.
Like, everybody's going to lose in this league, you know? And, I think if you could grab John and tell him, okay, will you take 3 losses from now till Selection Sunday? He'd kill for that. You know, I think any coach in this league would. In this league, like, because the league's so good, just at the, you know, at the top particularly, you've got, and there's some depth to it as well, but you've got Michigan, Michigan State, Iowa, Wisconsin, Ohio State, even still all in the top 20 at KenPom. The one that's interesting to me, I wrote about this a little bit, sort of as an introduction into Sunday night's top 25-1, is Iowa, because listen, they're obviously great according to KenPom. They've an offense rated 5th nationally. They're 4th in the KenPom standings right now. If that's 4th in the country, not 4th in the Big Ten, but they're 0-4 against other top 25-1 teams, which may or may not matter to anybody other than me. But that's a fact. What I just said. Although 3 of those games, I believe, were on the road. They're 3-4, I think, against the top 50 of the RPI and top 50 of KenPom. So they are statistically great, and they're and when you watch them, I think you see a really strong basketball team, but they're sort of missing the signature wins at this point. You know, they got a nice win over Xavier, and that is a nice win. They've got a nice win over Minnesota, I guess, or at least a blowout of Minnesota. Minnesota has proved to be a quality opponent. And then they've got the win at Ohio State, which looked good at the time, but now everybody beats Ohio State, so I don't know how good that is. We haven't taken any bad losses, and there's something to be said for that, but that they're just, I guess, for my liking, missing like this one big
I think
win.
That'll change. I mean, they have Michigan State, Ohio State, and Michigan.
It's going to change tomorrow, probably, right?
Yeah, they have those Michigan State, Illinois, Ohio State, Michigan
in
the next 4 games, and the only road game is Illinois. So in 2 weeks, we could be having this conversation. They have, you know, 3 top 25 wins or whatever.
Well, that's exactly right. Like, it's interesting. Like, Iowa fans have just been wearing me out, right? And so, because I have them ranked 19th and they think they should be 13th, so let's fight over it, you know? Like, whatever. If you wanted to argue they should be 15th, I'm fine with that. I don't, you know, there's nothing, like, a lot of this stuff is subjective. But, like, my major issue with them in regards to how I look at a body of work is that where is your big-time signature win? And the truth is, like, you know, tomorrow night they're going to get it, you know, barring an upset. Like, they will be, you know, an obvious favorite against Michigan State at home, a shorthanded Michigan State team at home. So a lot of this stuff is going to be solved, you know, by midnight on Tuesday.
I buy Iowa overall, sleeper Final Four team.
Yeah.
I love their offense.
I agree with that.
Yeah. I'm just saying big picture.
So many, yeah, I mean, they're kind of the same team every game. They haven't really had a really bad game or a really great game. They've just been very, very good pretty much every night out. And I think there's something they said for, you know, consistency like that. There's, you know, we've seen teams up and down all year. Iowa's kind of been the same. Just pretty steady throughout either home or away.
And I think that. Norlander and I have talked about this before. You know, sometimes we take teams that just beat other bad that beat bad teams consistently, we sort of take it for granted. We sort of say, hey, that's what you're supposed to do. A little bit of that's going on right now with Wichita State, right? Well, hey, you're supposed to beat all these teams. But when you say that, you're forgetting that every single weekend, teams lose to teams they're not supposed to lose to. And so I do think it's an accomplishment to never lose to teams you're not supposed to lose to. And at this point, Iowa has pretty much played 20 games without taking a bad loss. They have, absolutely, played 20 games without taking a bad loss. I don't want to say they haven't lost anybody they weren't supposed to lose to, because, you know, maybe you're supposed to beat Villanova on a neutral or whatever, but they haven't taken a bad loss. You know,
They've also throttled those bad teams.
Yes.
It hasn't really been close. Like, they beat Northwestern by, like, 26 and Minnesota by 21 and Northwestern by 26. So they're not even letting these bad teams hang around. And I think, you know, come the NCAA tournament, when they're in a 3-14, 4-13 game, you know, that's going to be important.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And that's why you can rely on them. Like, if you're filling out a bracket, you know, assuming Iowa's going to get, I mean, hell, a two seed, 3 seed, 4 seed, like, you can almost, I don't want to say, you know, you can make maybe pencil them, like, you can believe that they're not, yeah, like, get them to the Sweet 16, because, like, they're going to probably go into March with one obvious thing you can say about them, which is they don't lose to teams they're not supposed to lose to. And in that NCAA tournament, that's a crucial component. Can you avoid, you know, an upset? And at this point, they basically done that. Again, depending on what you thought of the Villanova game that was played on November 30th on a neutral court, but they don't lose to bad teams, and that's a good quality to have entering a single elimination tournament.
They're similar in that way to Louisville, who has absolutely smashed.
Just
killed most of the terrible competition that it's played. And Louisville, like Iowa, is in need. I mean, I was there for the nice road win against UConn on January 18th. But UConn is probably going to be somewhere between a 7 and a 10 seed, in my opinion. So that's a nice win, but not a great win. Really, Louisville's going to have to take advantage of the few options it has in the American, which it's got a few more than we thought it would. I mean, honestly, like, I'm totally down to talk about two teams that probably aren't getting enough love right now. And
Cincinnati and SMU.
And Pittsburgh. Cincinnati and Pittsburgh overall. Like, Cincinnati's 19-2, has not lost since December 14th. Really, really solid defensive team. Justin Jackson's probably the best player in that league people don't know about, and he didn't even play in their win on Sunday against Temple, which they just barely escaped. Temple probably should have won,
hurt.
But way down there. Sean Kilpatrick's been a great player, so I'm totally ready to start giving love to the Bearcats. That strength of schedule, obviously, non-con. I'm looking at KenPom right now, guys. 3-15. That's what hurts them, because in so many years, they don't play a really good non-con schedule, and so Cronin gets nailed for that, and that's why probably we haven't been talking about them. But, hey, 19-2 overall, they've been awesome. And my grander point is that the American right now has five teams in the mix for the postseason, which is probably the best case scenario they could have asked for, because SMU, who now has a little bit of drama on their hands, and if Borzella wants to get into that, he can. But regardless, they're 16-4, and if they can get one or two nice wins in the league, they've already dropped one to Cincinnati and Louisville, but they'll have their chances again. We could have a situation where that league is looking at five bids overall. So it's turned out to be a nice situation, but the teams on top really got to make sure they don't stumble against Temple, South Florida, Rutgers, UCF, you know?
Well, Cincinnati's got Louisville this weekend, right? I mean, this Thursday. So it's at Louisville, so that at least they'll be projected to take their first league loss then. But either way, the job that Mick's doing is pretty remarkable. They got a defense that's ranked top five nationally. I saw them, I don't know, I guess it was about a month ago when they came in to Memphis, and they didn't just, like, steal a game on the road. Like, they overwhelmed Memphis. Like, they frustrated Memphis, and they beat them. I think the final margin was, like, by 16 points. And, again, like you said, they haven't lost since that neutral court game to Xavier on December 14th. So that's a really good Cincinnati team. And the American in general is, you know, what's interesting to me is not just that there's five in the top 35, but that they're all sort of – there's not much difference between any of them. Like, Connecticut, Memphis, SMU, Louisville, Cincinnati. Like, I don't know how much difference there is between any of those teams.
I'm curious about SMU, too. Like, I don't know how good they are yet, but they're obviously not bad. I mean, we just talked about Iowa, how they've won every game they're supposed to. SMU's kind of doing the same thing. I mean, they lost to Louisville, at Cincinnati, at Arkansas, and a 3-point loss on a neutral to Virginia. And they're beating up the bad teams pretty well. They have Memphis on Saturday at home. And I think that's a huge opportunity for them. If they lose that, then I think, you know, the kind of mystique about them, or if there is a mystique about SMU, is going to kind of go away. But if they win that, I think they're a legitimate, you know, clearly an NCAA tournament team, and I think they can make a case as maybe the third best team in the AAC, if not better.
Yeah, no, and I don't know if there's a mystique around them, but certainly I think people are starting to pay attention. I mean, when you play in a league with four other NCAA tournament caliber teams, and you're sitting here at 16-4 overall, 5-2 with a win over Connecticut, if folks aren't paying attention, they ought to. You know, Larry Brown's doing a nice job there, and I think it's happening for him a little more quickly than I thought it would. I thought he was probably one more year away from doing what he's doing right now.
Yeah, he's meshing, you know, a great recruiting class. You know, junior college guys, freshmen. He had five returning starters, and you know, that's a lot of talent, but it's also a lot of, you know, personalities and could have chemistry issues. And he's, you know, done a terrific job with that. They only had the Jalen Jones transfer beginning of the year, but that's kind of been the only issue with them, you know, obviously until today with the Keith Frazier academic stuff.
You reported on that, Borzella. Let's get into that for a second. For those who are unfamiliar, you can find the story at CBSSports.com. A Dallas television station is reporting that Keith Frazier had a grade changed in high school. I'll let you take over from there, Borzella.
Yeah, there was an independent investigation, internal investigation by the Dallas, you know, independent school district or something like that, and they found out that Frazier had three failing grades heading into the final weeks of his senior year, and
the club.
And it could have prevented him from graduating high school, and obviously it would have affected his eligibility at SMU. And then suddenly, he had passing grades, and one guy, a teacher's assistant slash soccer coach there at Kimball High School in Texas, admitted that he changed one of Frazier's grades from failing to passing. You know, then it brings up the question: what did SMU know? In the report, they say that one of the SMU assistants was calling and finding out what he could do, what Frazier could do to improve his grade. I don't know if there's anything malicious in that. I'm assuming that
that's, you know, every assistant coach in America
every coach
makes that
calls
phone call
to find out if their kid can, you know, get better grades.
Listen, my wife was a teacher. Like, this stuff goes on, and not just with athletes. Or how about this? My wife's a mother. So you know what she does all the time? She calls my son's fifth grade teacher and is like, is there anything he can do extra credit? Is there anything he can do to make sure he gets his B up to an A? So there's
I cut deals in high school to get better.
Of course, I cut deals in high school. I cut deals in college.
Right.
You know, I actually, like, it was sort of funny when the North Carolina academic fraud story first broke, and let me be clear, like, that is way worse today than what we thought it was at the time. Like, there were actually classes that didn't exist and athletes were in them, and so I'm not trying to diminish you know, what happened at North Carolina or discount that. It was academic fraud, seems quite clear to me, on January 27, 2014. That said, there was a time where we were talking about the story was more rooted in athletes taking easy classes. The last two courses I ever took in college to graduate with a four-year degree, a bachelor's degree, I took them at a junior college, and I transferred them back to the University of Memphis because somebody told me, if you just go to this junior college that's 6 miles away from the University of Memphis campus, there's a certain teacher there who teaches Spanish 3 and 4, and you don't have to take 1 and 2 to take 3 and 4. In other words, 1 and 2 weren't going to help me graduate. I needed 3 and 4, but I had never taken 1 and 2. And they said they'll let you at the junior college take 3 and 4 without 1 and 2, and just level with the guy, and he'll make sure you get your grades. I walked in this summer term. Oh, by the way, I took 3 and 4 at the exact same time in the summer term. Okay, I to this day I can't speak a word of Spanish. So except for Corona, and I'm not even sure that's Spanish. So I walk into the class, and I actually already had a job lined up at the Commercial Appeal newspaper, right? And so I walk in, and I said, listen, sir, I don't want to say his name because I don't want the guy to lose his job, but I said, professor, junior college professor, I already have a job lined up. I am a sports writer. I have a job lined up connected to that field. It has nothing to do with Spanish. I have to have these two classes to make sure that I graduate so that I can accept this job in a formal way. I will be here every single day for class. I will never miss a class. I will stay late. I'll do extra work. I'll turn in all my assignments. I'm going to do the best I can. But understand, I'm not equipped to be here. But I'll work harder than anybody you got. And he just sort of, he said, well, I appreciate you coming to me. And I walked out of there with a B and a B and graduated college. And so, the idea that you know, forget athletes getting favors. Sometimes just journalism majors get favors. But having actual grades changed, that's a different deal. I don't remember that ever happening.
Right. Yeah. No, that's...
I think that's the kind of the bad, and it happened in we've seen it before in
Eric Bledsoe, Darrell Arthur, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
but here's the other thing. Whatever comes of this, did the NCAA really get involved in this? You know, like Darrell Arthur had a great change. Eric Bledsoe like had a great change, and to me, that's still the funniest story ever, because it was it was changed by, I can't remember the details of it, right? But the way that the, and I don't know if it's the Birmingham School Board or the Alabama School Board, whatever the board is that regulates this type of stuff, they investigated and they concluded that the grade was changed for no reason. They could not come up with any reason that the grade was changed, which suggests that it was changed improperly, because why are you changing stuff if there's no reason to actually change it? And yeah. But what was backwards about the whole thing, I remember writing about it, is that they concluded that because they couldn't figure out why the grade was changed, that the grade wasn't changed for improper reasons. Therefore, they weren't going to do anything about it, which to me, like, flew in the face of common sense. Like, yo, man, if the grade was changed and you can't figure out why it was changed, like if you can't find a good reason for it to have been changed, that means it was changed improperly. And that means it was changed so that he would be eligible to play college basketball. And yet, for some reason, the Alabama school board and Kentucky fans couldn't grasp that.
I think the NCAA, when stuff like this gets to, like, if it were just the Dallas station for some reason, and it maybe got a mention on the Dallas Morning News site, it probably doesn't catch as much attention, but we've got it on our site. We know the major sites are probably going to go with this as well. It might capture their attention. We'll see. Nothing will happen this year. It's not going to affect SMU's team this season, I would not think. So, and Frazier, I mean, he's a freshman. He's not really contributing a lot. I mean, he's coming off the bench and scoring a few points per game, but he's by no means one of the four or five most important players for that team right now, even though he was a coveted recruit. So, something to monitor, but it, to me, feels maybe more like an offseason story that might gather some legs if the NCAA so chooses to run with it. By the way, I just wanted to spring real quick on Pittsburgh, because they lost to Cincinnati, so they're 18-2. They've lost to Cincinnati by one, and they lost at Syracuse by five. And anyone that watched that game knows that Pittsburgh really could have won that game. They seem to also not be getting respect in terms of, like, I'm starting to think this could be a top 10 team. I don't know if you guys disagree with that or not, but Lamar Patterson he's almost been like Casey Prather at Florida, and just like dudes that are having senior seasons that have come out of freaking nowhere. He's been studly, man. So good. They've got a lot. They've got two big tests this week. They got Duke at home tonight, Monday, and then they get Virginia on Sunday. And if they can beat Duke, I think finally, then people are just going to realize that this team's legit. But I mean, do you think this is I know they have problems reaching the Final Four, but do you think this is a team that can make it finally under Dixon to the Final Four, or are you still not totally buying it?
The problem with both Pittsburgh and Cincinnati in terms of perception is that a lot of people watched that Pittsburgh-Cincinnati game back in December.
Yes.
Because it was right before Florida-Memphis, and that game was awful. It was like 44-43, and it was a really, really bad, poorly played game offensively. And I think people saw that game and were like, I mean, these two teams, they can't score, like, you know, and gave up on them off that. So I think that kind of, you know, has to do with the perception. I do think Pittsburgh, I think, you know, obviously they've had problems in the past in the tournament, but I think they're built this year. I mean, they're disciplined, they defend, they have, you know, they have a lot of guys that can score. They're not, you know, not 5-20 point per game guys, but I think they have a bunch of different options offensively, and they're, you know, they're going to defend, they're going to rebound. You know, it's classic Pittsburgh basketball with Lamar Patterson having the ability to kind of take them to that next level down the stretch of games.
I think the problem for and you guys are both right. Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, they both got ridiculous records. They're both good, and all of the, you know, the analytics love both of those teams. They're both ranked the top, I don't know, 10, 11, 12 in defensive efficiency. The problem is that if you start a season unranked, you're off the radar until you do something to get yourself on the radar. And so neither Jamie nor Mick scheduled aggressively enough to get their schools on the radar. And so Cincinnati, they basically only played three quality non-league games, right? New Mexico, they lost. Xavier, they got rolled. And then they played Pittsburgh in a game that everybody watched. And though you should have been probably saying, my God, they just beat Pittsburgh, that's a great win, because the final score was 44-43, folks just walked away from it, like, disgusted by both teams. Meantime, Pittsburgh played like one quality non-league opponent, and it happened to be that Cincinnati game where it was 44-43. So they have been hindered, at least the perception of both of those teams, and I think the national rankings of both of those teams, by the way that they scheduled in the non-league and then the way that they performed against poor non-league schedule. Cincinnati, again, probably went 1-2 in quality non-league games, and Pittsburgh went 0-1. Fast forward to today, though, and you know, at some point, the quality of the teams become undeniable. And so I think Pittsburgh still probably doesn't deserve, like Mark Turgeon over the weekend after Pitt beat Maryland, he said, listen, that's a top five team. They should be ranked in the top five. I think those are two different things. And I realize the way people rank teams is very subjective. Like, I don't agree with the way you might do it, and Borzello might not agree with the way Norlander does it, and so on and so forth. But I think you could reasonably say Pitt's one of the top five teams in the country, but then I could reasonably counter it with that's not where they should be ranked, though. They're still sitting here with zero top 50 wins. Now, that could change tonight against Duke, and in fact, it probably will change tonight against Duke. But at this moment, and this is going to hurt them on Selection Sunday as well, they're not going to have the type of resume that's going to be in play for a one seed, probably.
Oh yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think Pittsburgh obviously is gonna they're gonna lose some games going forward here,
right.
And that non-con's gonna hurt them, and so they're gonna be in a similar situation to Wichita State in terms of I think a low loss count, and I think even like one loss for Wichita State is gonna eliminate that their chance at a one seed. I really think they got to be undefeated going to Selection Sunday given their overall profile and what they'll be going up against. Pittsburgh is similar in that way. I don't see this team being able to get a three seed or better unless it wins the ACC tournament and probably loses only two more games going forward. That's probably what it's only going to be able to do. It'll be interesting to see going here, guys. Pittsburgh, Syracuse, Duke playing each other. Virginia, you can toss in the mix as well. I mean, teams are going to lose, so let's, you know, try and not overreact. And we don't. I'm just kind of speaking to the general public here. Let's not overreact to the fact that, you know, teams are going to play. One team's got to win. One team's got to lose. But that said, I do think Pittsburgh needs to split its next two home games against Duke and Virginia. If it doesn't, then, yeah, if we want to kind of downgrade Pitt and say it's really a second-tier team, by no means a Sweet 16 team, I think that's fair.
Well, I think that, you know, if you said if they lose probably two more games the rest of the year, they have a shot at a two or a one. You know, they don't have that many opportunities for a slip. Like, they have Duke, Virginia, and Syracuse at home, and those are their three toughest games the rest of the way. You know,
right.
So it's conceivable that they win all three of those games at home, and then the road games are against BC and Notre Dame and you know, Clemson and teams like that, where they can win on the road. So if they get past these two games, you know, without a loss, you know, we might be seeing them only lose one game the rest of the regular season.
You know, and I'm a little more sympathetic. I know you brought up Wichita State. I'm a little more sympathetic to Wichita State than I am Pittsburgh when it comes to this, because Wichita State at least tried to schedule. They went to St. Louis. They and that's a great win. I know it doesn't register like going and winning at, you know, Duke, Michigan, but it's about the same damn thing. You know, like that's a great win, right? They scheduled Tennessee, which a team that was mostly picked third in the SEC. They went to Alabama, which was a school that was ranked or that was predicted to finish like top five in the SEC. So they at least tried to get in that event down in Dallas,
BYU,
Fort Worth.
Too.
They beat BYU. So they at least scheduled in a way to, they said, listen, and Greg Marshall is on record. Like, I talked to him about it last week. Listen, they have made it be known. They will not be bought. They are not going to be a buy game. But they are willing to play literally anybody in a home-and-home or literally anybody in a neutral court. Like Syracuse, Duke, Carolina, Kansas, Kansas State, Illinois, anybody in the country. You give us a home-and-home, we'll even start at your place, or we'll play you on a neutral. And they just can't get games. Like, nobody's going to get involved in that. And so maybe that changes over the years. You know, once it becomes clear that, hey, there's nothing to be embarrassed about losing to Wichita State. But they at least tried. They were aggressive. Greg was aggressive in scheduling. Jamie wasn't. And so if the committee is going to hold, you know, those schools accountable for non-conference strength of schedule. And if you talk to anybody who's ever been involved in the process, they will always tell you they look at non-conference strength of schedule is a big deal in that selection room, because they want to know, did you even try? With Wichita State, I think you can look at their non-conference schedule, see the ratings not great, and then still go, but they tried. you know, you couldn't predict that Alabama was going to suck or that Tennessee was going to be all over the place or that BYU wasn't going to be as good as we thought. They tried to schedule the right way. Pittsburgh didn't try to schedule the right way. And to me, so I guess this is my point. On Selection Sunday, if the committee punishes Pittsburgh with a lower seeding than what their record actually suggests they ought to be, I won't defend Pitt. But I would defend Wichita State because they at least tried.
And I think the committee does, to a certain extent, take that into account just pragmatically, and they understand the situation that Wichita State can be in terms of scheduling, the situation they're in terms of their league. I think they still go a lot by let's line up the resumes and talk
sure. And
just hash this out. But I do think that there is a little bit of perspective there. But we'll see going forward. Hey GP, is Texas gonna, are they going to be in the tournament here? I mean, you wrote about Barnes over the weekend. That's kind of an emerging story. And that league is, by the way, like for Texas to do it right now, Big 12 is awesome. So I think this is a pretty cool story. But the always opinionated, our buddy in the business, Dan Walken, basically said this doesn't mean anything because Rick Barnes basically was terrible in recruiting and he made Texas a program below what it should be. So why are we giving him credit now? I guess there's a point to that, but I still, maybe it's just the optimist in me, I still give him a lot of credit for doing what he's done with the guys he has and still outperforming expectations this year that, okay, maybe we're lowered on his own behalf.
Yeah, no, look, I think Dan makes a good point. But I can look at this a couple different ways. And I referenced this in the column. Like, it's hard for me to applaud Rick Barnes for doing more with less, because you should never be doing more with less at Texas. I mean, the resources are there. The recruiting base is there. I did that column when Emmanuel Mudiay committed to SMU about the in-state recruiting, and I can't remember the details exactly, but it was something like of the 19 past top 40 recruits from the state of Texas, only one had enrolled at the University of Texas. It was something like that. It was something that even if you just sort of know, man, Rick Barnes has been struggling in recruiting lately, the number blew you away. The number was like, my God, how did they get to this point? So I'm a little hesitant, a little like Dan, to say, hey, man, isn't Rick Barnes doing a great job? Because the truth is, like, I hate it when people start talking about, oh, man, who does more with less than so-and-so? Like, you shouldn't be doing more with less. You should, like, at Texas, do more with more. Like, this isn't the NBA. You are in charge of your roster. That's the big part of college coaching. In fact, it's the biggest part of college coaching. You know, in the NBA, like, you look at Brad Stevens at Boston, he's not in charge of his roster. Or you know, any of the bad NBA teams. Like, they're not, you got to get the guys you get through the draft, free agency that your front office has put together, assembled, and then you do the best you can with them. So if you overachieve with them, then you go, my God, like Brad Stevens is doing a nice job in Boston. He's doing more with less. But he's got no control over what his roster looks like. In college basketball, you forever have control over your roster. And when you are at a place like Texas, you should have a great roster. Maybe not a great team, but you should have a great roster every year. Like at Kentucky, you should have a great roster every year. Carolina, you should have a great roster every year. And so I'm down with the idea of let's not like start patting Rick Barnes on the back because he's overachieving with these three-star recruits. And in the larger picture, he's still going to have three-star recruits next year too. Like the recruiting class they got coming in ain't great. So let's take a step back and look. And I'm willing to do all that in March. In fact, I think you could reasonably, even if this team makes the NCAA tournament, look at where the program's headed, look at the talent in the program, and conclude maybe you need new energy there. Like, I think you could do that. But all of that said, at some point, this season starts, and you were picked to finish 8th in the Big 12, and now you might finish 2nd in the Big 12, or it could theoretically finish 2nd in the Big 12. You're probably going to be ranked in the top 25 when the polls are updated this afternoon. So, listen, how they ended up in this position, that falls on Rick's shoulders and the staff's shoulders, and they deserve criticism for that. I've criticized them for that, even though I like those guys. But given where they were, you know, on November 8th when the season started, to be sitting here on January 27th at 16-4 that's pretty impressive.
Borzello, who is the best right now? Who is the guy that was the most highly touted in that Texas actually landed on this
well,
team?
I was actually going to say that it's not a coincidence that their hot streak is coinciding with improved play from Cameron Ridley,
right,
who was a five-star recruit. And you know, obviously, you know, get more five-star recruits. That's a lesson here. You know, he had 14 rebounds the other day. He's had a bunch of double-doubles lately, and he's the most talented coming out of high school, at least, guy on the roster. He did nothing last year, and, you know, now he's playing better, and to me, it's not a surprise that Texas is also playing better.
Doesn't really seem like he's an off season away of like really dedicating himself in the gym, maybe eating a little better from
being
like
that
a top
for a while now.
Yeah, but like you can, it's almost like you can see the talent there, and maybe to compare him to Pittman at Texas a few years back. But like if he just sheds a little baby fat, puts on a little more muscle, like he could be a top 15 player in the country. You just almost see it emerging there if he can just kind of get his body in better shape.
Yeah, I mean, he was a top 10 kid coming out of high school, and he was always a really good back-to-the-basket player, you know, low-post guy. And you're right. I mean, if he gets into shape, if he, you know, dedicates himself to you know, getting, you know, reforming his body, you know, he could be a guy that's, you know, a Big 10, all Big 12 player, and a guy that's a top 25, top 30 player nationally.
Hey, before we wrap this up, I got a tweet probably 2 weeks ago from a guy, and he was like, listen, I enjoy the podcast, but you guys never talk about the SEC. Could you talk about the SEC a little bit? We either talk about...
Talk about.
Okay, let's talk about it for a minute. And maybe that's exactly what we ought to talk about. Like, okay, Florida's good. Kentucky, I think, is probably never going to be what we thought they'd be, but they're a rock-solid top 20 team. And then after that, where do we go?
Somebody tweeted me over the weekend, if Florida or Kentucky wins the SEC tournament, how many bids does the SEC get? And I said three. And I don't even know who that third team is. I mean, I think Florida's a Final Four team. I think Kentucky's got, you know, as much talent as anybody in the country. But after that, you have, you know, five teams kind of fighting for that third spot. But I don't think any of them are all that good. I mean, you have Missouri, LSU, you know, Ole Miss has kind of thrown themselves into the mix. Tennessee's still there. Arkansas at home, at least, is a candidate. But, you know, to me, it's just I don't see them getting more than three bids to the tournament.
Listen. This league, for now, basically a decade, has been carried by Florida and Kentucky. Like, every now and then, obviously, Tennessee was rolling with Bruce Pearl. But over the past decade, those have been the only two programs that have consistently been at the top of the league and really have been attractions. And it's a problem for the conference. It should be way better than this year in and year out, but it's not. I'm not sure why it's not. Within this year, I think it's going to get four because I think, again, we're going to have a situation where we're just not going
to
have...
How are you going to get to four?
Like, yeah,
I think we're going to get to four. Yeah. I think we're going to get to four because we really don't have a lot of mid-major candidates that are really on the bubble. Like BYU, sure. They're just not there. Right. So I think those four, by the way, teams three and four, they could both be going to Dayton.
Yeah.
But I think that whether Ole Miss or Tennessee or Missouri trip into the field, I think they're just going to be barely getting in. Like, I think it's going to be like three is, I think, a guarantee. And then that fourth team might barely trip in just because the whole field in general, like, I really think seeds one, two, three, and four are going to be really strong this year. And then every year the bubble's weak, obviously. But I'm just saying the mid-major situation is not that inspiring. The Valley is way down below Wichita State. Like, Indiana State, they're going to need to beat Wichita State to even have a bubble profile. And even then, it's going to be weak. So that's why I say four. But yeah, Ole Miss, hey, give them credit. They're 5-1. Marshall Henderson is doing his
got cussed out again over the weekend.
He's inducing coaches, and Rick Ray's a really good dude. He induced Rick Ray to
Rick Ray's the best dude. Even Rick Ray, like, you can see Calipari popping off or Frank Martin popping off, or
Rick Ray's like the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah. Or Johnny Jones popping off, or I could see Mark Fox popping off. Like Rick Ray is the nicest dude in the world. If he can't help himself, like, what does that say about Marshall?
Exactly. I mean, honestly, and by the way, yes, I noted yesterday was the 1 year anniversary of
which is
the greatest college basketball gif of all time, and of course Borzello's epic write up of that. And yeah, listen, Henderson and Ole Miss, they're in the mix at least, which I did not think that would be the case. But 14-5 overall, 5-1 in the league. Now, but here's the deal. So they get the road game at Wednesday at Tennessee. Tennessee's got to win that game. If they lose that, they're going to be 12-8, 3-4. They're basically going to be done, barring an unpredictable, you know, win 7 of 8 stretch in the league. And even then, they're not going to have a ton of great wins in that stretch, given what the SEC is. So that's probably a do or die game for Tennessee.
Look at Missouri. Their next four, they have at Arkansas, home Kentucky, at Florida, at Mississippi. So they can go 1-3, 0-4 during that stretch, and they're going to be another team that needs to win 6 in a row, 7 in a row at some point. So to me, I just don't see how you're getting to 4.
I wish this league was better, guys. It just, every year.
So do I. Like, I live in the middle of it. Like, I wish it were better, too. And every year I start to, like, I thought Tennessee would be really good this year. And then I saw LSU at the Old Spice, and I saw them lose to Memphis, but I think they went 2-1 while they were down there. And I walked out of that going, man, that's going to be really good. They got pro bigs and good enough guards and like that. I thought, okay, Florida's good. Kentucky's good. Tennessee's going to be good. LSU's going to be good. And then I was surprised a little bit by Missouri. I said, okay, they'll be good. They're going to have 5 good schools. And Missouri still is at this point sitting here at 15-4.
15-4.
Yeah, so it's not
like they have a win over at UCLA.
They went over UCLA, but like still, like all of these teams, like Tennessee is just all over the place. Missouri's all over the place. LSU is losing games it has no business losing. And Ole Miss is 5-1 in the SEC. I don't trust that team. I don't think this team is as good as last year's team. And so, like Florida, Kentucky, but then the rest of them, I could probably take them or leave them at this point, you know?
Yeah, and it's funny you say this. It's interesting how our perceptions are shaped. You say this Ole Miss team probably isn't as good as last year's team, and last year's team was a 12 seed.
They got bounced
by a hot but not amazing LaSalle team in the tournament. So that doesn't speak well to.
Yeah, but I still I stand by that though.
I'm just saying in general, like. You know, that just speaks to kind of the greater problem with the SEC overall. So, I mean,
like, okay, I don't think this Ole Miss team's going to be a 12 seed.
So, you know, so over under 3.5 bids for the SEC.
I think you guys are going under. I think I would take under. I think it's going to be 3. I think it's going to be Kentucky, Florida, and then somebody else.
Unnamed 3 team, yeah.
Yeah, and then somebody. I think. Now, I understand a lot of times you see this on television all the time. I don't mean to disparage TV guys because I'm one of those guys sometimes, but you often see them get on TV and they're like, this team's in and this team's out and this team's out, and this team's in. And you know that they've never sat down and put pen to paper, you know, like you got to fill out a bracket. It's a little bit like the top 25 and one people. I had a couple people last night on Twitter go, well, how could you rank UCLA? Well, dude, who do you want me to put 26th? Have you looked at it? Like should I put Virginia there instead or Providence or VCU? Like, there's not a no-brainer pick there. Like, you know, UCLA is just – trust me, I looked at it. I spent more time than I should have looking at all the candidates for that N1 spot. UCLA belongs there just as much as anybody else. So same thing applies to the NCAA tournament. You can't just go, God, Alabama sucks and Tennessee sucks and LSU's terrible, because you're going to put some average teams in the NCAA tournament. We do it every year. And so, you know, that – but if let me put it this way. If the SEC gets 4, it's going to be a very average 4th team getting in.
Yeah, and that's their average, by the way. I looked it up over the past 5 years. 3 bids, 4 bids, 5 bids, 4 bids, 3 bids. So they're kind of sending 4 per year. That's not good enough if you're a conference with that many teams. You know, 14 teams in it, and previously they were obviously at 12 before A&M and Missouri came. It should be better, but at least it's got Kentucky and Florida every year being Final Four quality hopeful teams. So that's kind of what it keeps the league treading water. I mean, honestly, like
every year except last year.
Well, I know, yeah, exactly.
Understand. No, you're right. I understand the point.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. Before we get out of here, do I have to tell the Trent Reznor story?
You kind of do, because you said you would. Now, you have told us this, so I'm willing to sit through it again.
Oh, you know this story?
You told us this story at the College Hoop Summit in the summer of 2013,
Jesus,
I believe.
Jesus, how do you remember that? I don't even remember that. Bro. Oh, God, I hope all the details are the same then when I retell it.
Yeah, no, go
so last
it.
Night, so Nine Inch Nails, like, which was a little weird. Like, why did Nine Inch Nails close the Grammys last night?
Well, it was because they always do like a collaboration. So you had Queens of the Stone Age, who released, in my opinion, the best record last year, plus Lindsey Buckingham. I'm cool with Lindsey Buckingham being involved in anything. And then Reznor is just Reznor, man. I don't know why they did that, but I'm totally down. And by the way, before you hop into this, did you see that Reznor tweeted? He basically he cursed out the
yeah he said F you or something like that
to the people that ran the Grammys because they cut off the performance before they were finished. But anyway, so go ahead, go into your Reznor story.
So last night, as Nine Inch Nails is closing the Grammys, or at least Trent Reznor's on stage with Nine Inch Nails, they you know, I tweeted a picture I had of me and Trent Reznor from when I was like 16, 17 years old, right? And so people are like laughing at it because I look ridiculous and I look like a kid. You know, I look like a kid. That's what I look like. I look like a 16, 17 year old kid. So it's funny. Like my hair was completely
that
different.
Hair, man.
Oh, I remember this story now. I remember you telling it. Yeah.
What it shows you is that no matter what my hair looks like, people are going to make fun of it. Like, I'm just forever in that box where people are going to clown my hair. Right. So we were in Dallas, Texas, my girlfriend. So here's the story. I had a lot of people, trust me, we've been on this thing an hour. I'm ready to go as well. But I had a bunch of people ask me about it on Twitter last night, and I promised that I would tell the story. And I'll give the quickest version I could possibly give. So my girlfriend, my high school girlfriend, just a sweet young girl, her father happened to live in Dallas, Texas. And so we were going down to visit her father, and we were going down. I can't remember if we scheduled it around a Nine Inch Nails show, but we were there at the time when Nine Inch Nails was there. It was on the Downward Spiral tour. After that album, which was a great album, and like just a terrific album. And so we had seen, me and a couple of friends had seen Nine Inch Nails on that tour like a month earlier in Memphis. And now we're in Dallas, Texas, and they're there as well. And when we were in Memphis, you know, listen, you're kids, right? So meeting like your rock star idols is like the coolest thing you could possibly do. So we were just hanging around outside the Auditorium North Hall at the Cook Convention Center downtown. And I had a shirt on. It was a black shirt. It had NIN on it, like Nine Inch Nails, except it said, "Now I'm Nothing," instead of Nine Inch Nails. And the manager for Nine Inch Nails like noticed it, and he was like, "Ah, I really like that shirt," and blah, 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 blah. "You don't really see that one too often." And that was the end of that conversation. Well, fast forward to Dallas, and we go to the show. It's Marilyn Manson. It's Jim Rose Circus Sideshow, Marilyn Manson, and the Nine Inch Nails. And so after the show, we got nothing to do, right? It's me, and I think my girlfriend was there, but I couldn't find any pictures with her. I don't know where she was, which is probably symbolic of my entire life. I could never quite figure out where my girlfriend was. So, but some other friends, like high school age guys, 16, 17, 18, 19 years old. And so we're like, we got nothing to do. So we're like, hey, you know, if we hung out like behind the arena, you know, maybe we could meet Trent Reznor again, and the, you know, whatever. So we see this manager guy, the same one that we had talked to before in Memphis. We see him again, and just sort of yell at him like a 17-year-old kid might. And he doesn't remember us, because why would he? But I say, hey, you know, we were in Memphis about a month ago. You know, you commented on my shirt or whatever. He was like, oh, so you guys came here from Memphis? We're like, well, yeah, you know, we came to see the show, and it's so funny. Like, you don't realize how ridiculous this is to ask somebody like him at the time, but we just did it, you know, because you're 17, you don't know any better. And I don't think he knew we were 17 or didn't care that we were 17. But I was like, so what are you guys doing later? Like, so I'm asking, like, hey, so what are you and Trent getting into later, right? And he actually said, like, listen, there's a big black bus and a big white bus. What I remember is, like, they were playing in Houston maybe the next night, or Austin the next night, or some other San Antonio the next night, but they weren't going to the next city until the next day. And so, or maybe they had a day off. Either way, they weren't getting back on the road. They were staying the night in Dallas. And so he said, listen, there's a big black bus, a big white bus. White bus is going back to the hotel. Black bus is, we're going out to some club, like a club called the Cellar. And so, listen, why don't you guys just hang out back here in your car, follow the black bus to the Cellar, and then like, you know, we're going to be there. So like, if you want to be there, you can be there. So we're like, oh, this is the coolest thing ever. A bunch of 17-year-old kids sitting in a car. Well, we park right behind this black bus, and we're just sitting there behind a black bus and for hours, like 2 hours at least. Finally, it cranks. Like, I actually remember falling asleep in the car waiting to follow this black bus to the Cellar. And so the black bus cranks up. Finally, we start following it. My friend somehow loses a black bus, just like loses a black bus on the interstate. I don't know how you do it, but he did it. I was asleep in the back seat. And so I wake up to him going, you know, hey, I can't find the bus. I'm like, how did you lose the black bus? It's the most ridiculous. Get off the interstate. Just get off at this exit. If you can't, if we don't see it, it had to have gotten off. So just get off, and then we'll figure out where the Cellar is, and then we'll go to the Cellar. It'll be fine. Keep in mind, this is before iPhones.
Or GPS. Yep.
Yeah. So we don't know. It ain't like you can just type Google, you know, the Cellar. So we get off, we go to a gas station. I walk inside the gas station. I said, listen, hey, man, I'm looking for a bar, a club. I think it was a club at this time. A club called The Cellar. The guy's like, nah, I don't know anything called The Cellar. I'm like, nah, no, no, The Cellar, you sure? He's like, nah, I don't know anything. There's nothing called The Cellar. I said, all right. As I'm walking out the gas station, he goes, oh, you're talking about The Basement. I'm yeah. like, I'm like, maybe The Basement then, maybe. He's like, yeah, The Basement. It's just right, like, take this street, two blocks, take a right, you'll see it. Well, they told us The Cellar. It was actually The Basement. They were just confused. More than that, it was called The Basement from Hell, all right? So now I'm 17 years old. There's the black bus, right? We park right there. It's not a club. It's a bar. It's a bar, like a pretty small bar with, like, a pool table and stuff. So we get there, and the manager's, like, standing outside the bus. He's like, hey, you guys made it. We're like, yeah, we made it. He's like, all right, well, Trent's finishing up a pizza. He's coming off the bus, and then we'll go inside. So 17-year-old me, like, walks into this bar with Trent Reznor, all right? Like, he's, like he's my guy.
Ridiculous, Jimmy.
Yeah, all right. So we get inside. Marilyn Manson's there. All right, like
this is like the peak of Marilyn Manson.
Oh yeah,
this
is the peak of Marilyn Manson. So there's probably 25 people in this bar. 25. One of them's me. One of them's my girlfriend. One of them is a couple buddies of mine. Then it's Trent Reznor, the whole band from Nine Inch Nails, Marilyn Manson, Jim Rose, my girlfriend's brother shooting pool with Jim Rose from the Jim Rose Circuit Sideshow. So we're in this bar till like 3 a.m. hanging out with Trent Reznor and Marilyn Manson. I don't mean like we weren't like sitting at the bar like chopping it up. Like what do you think of Kansas? You know, like we weren't like any, like so. Who's gonna win the Big 12? It wasn't anything like that. But like we were in the same bar with Trent Reznor all night long, and so at the end of the night, one of my buddy's little brothers came with us. Now he was probably like 15 years old. I have no idea where his parents were, but he is buddied up with. I can't remember who the guitar player was for Marilyn Manson. I want to say it was like Squiggy or does this make any sense?
I cannot help you out.
No okay, I got to figure this out. So there's what is the dude's name? Squiggy or something. So anyway, he's buddies with him, right? He's been hanging out with him all night long. So at the end of the night, it's just very clear, like it's time to go. Like this is getting weird, and we probably shouldn't have been there anyway. And so it's like, all right, look, go get his name was Jeremy. Go get Jeremy. And Jeremy was like, Squiggy said he'd take me home. And I'm like, yo, man, you can't go home with Squiggy. All right, like you got to come with us. And so he was about to fight us because he was so mad that we were taking him away. He thought he was going to join Marilyn Manson like on tour, like starting tomorrow. So the whole thing was just bizarre. And either way, before we left the place, I took I fixed my hair brilliantly and took a nice picture with Trent Reznor.
Dude, that is great stuff.
And then
perfect way to end the podcast.
And Trent Reznor has gone on to win Academy Awards, and
he really did. He inspired a nation of teenage hermits. Basically, couple of those Nine Inch Nails albums are. It's actually that's another kind of bring it full circle. Like there's a very big group of 30 to 40 year olds that if they listen to the Downward Spiral today, given the lyrical content, would probably be embarrassed by it. But because they discovered it when they were 16 years old,
it was the best.
It was just the best, right?
The Downward Spiral was the best.
Exactly. Oh no, I'm right there with you.
But
man.
The problem is, I bought the new Nine Inch Nails album, the one that was released earlier this year or late last year, whenever. And I was like, I couldn't. Like it was like. Come on, Trent. You're not over it already? Like, you should be over it by now. Like, you shouldn't still be mad at people, you know? Yeah. And mad
but
at
now, hey, listen. Now he's got a whole new material to go write another awesome record after being ticked off at being cut off. By the way, this is a record for podcasts.
We're
at an hour 16, and I'm thrilled with it. And for everyone that's listened, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you guys. Oh, I just looked it up. Twiggy. His name was Twiggy Ramirez. You can look him up on Wikipedia. That's who my buddy, my 15-year-old buddy, was hanging out with all night. And at the end of the night, Twiggy was like, oh, I can take Jeremy home. Like, no, Twiggy, you cannot. You can't take Jeremy home. Remember to subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast over at iTunes. It's the quickest way to make sure you get the latest edition. So do that. I appreciate you guys being here, putting up with this. And I will talk to you a little later on this week. Take care.